Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hello, you're listening to the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, DC. We're at 1770 Euclid Street. This episode is part of All Things Local, where we highlight DC history, culture, and communities, and Washingtonians who have made an impact on our city. I am your host, Ray Barker, an archivist and special collections department at the MLK Library. Today we have two guests, Chris Suspect and Carolyn Toy. These two are DC photographers, so we'll be talking about who they are and what they do in current projects, etc. So we can dive right in. I wanted to begin just by talking about how I met each of you, and that was at an exhibit, a photo exhibit, at Gallery O on H Street, maybe 3 or 4 months ago. There's a panel there consisting of DC photographers Cynthia Connolly, Michael Horsley's show, who I keep wanting to bring in to talk to me about his work. And on that panel, I learned about some of your projects. And so I thought we would talk through some of those and dig in more detail, because I was sort of intrigued by what I heard and what I saw. And I'm holding the DCIC Art of a Vanishing City book, a brand new book by Carolyn Toy of photographs. But welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we can dive in. Carolyn, I'll grill you, but Chris is going to jump in and interrupt me and tell me I'm asking stupid questions and improve the conversation. But can we just start about, like, where you live and how you started taking photographs?
Sure. I live in Southwest DC. I'm a native Washingtonian. I actually sort of started photography by accident. A coworker in 2004 happened to mention to me that she was a photographer. And photography was something I was always very interested in, but had never really seriously pursued. And she then proceeded to tell me that there were several other of our coworkers who were also interested in photography, and we decided to start a photo club. So that went on probably for a couple of months, maybe a year. And after that fizzled out, I just kind of continued on my own. But a lot of the photographs, several of the photographs in the book actually do have their genesis from some of those early projects that I worked on.
2011 or
2004 is when I started.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's a long time ago.
Yes.
Was it digital, purely digital, or what was the format?
Actually, not for me. Most of the other photographers did shoot digitally, but because I had never really shot before or in such a long time, I didn't really know if I'd really be any good at photography, so I didn't want to invest a lot of money in that. So I actually ended up buying a reconditioned Nikon film camera on eBay, and a few months later, I got a gift certificate for my birthday, and I bought a little Canon Digi, and that's what I shot with for most of my early years. I shoot digitally now, but that's what I did back then.
Well, great, and I was going to say, I'm flipping through your book right now, and I'm trying to place you in the city and what your process is like. Are you going alone? Are you, like, just walking around? I mean, how much thought do you put in to, well, I'm going to go target that part of DC and capture X, Y, and Z? Or, like, what's that like?
Actually, my process was a little interesting. At the time, 2004, my son was young. I was just starting my job. I didn't have the time to go out like a lot of photographers do and just walk around the city. How I ended up taking the pictures is that because I was doing so much driving over the course of a day, I just decided that, I'll try to just do what I can to fit photography in my life. So I decided I would just keep a camera with me, and if I saw something that I thought was beautiful, then that's what I would shoot. So the images in the book, practically everything that I've taken, really traces the route that I would take on a normal day, just doing wherever I had to go.
So I'm looking at this image, traffic signal from 2017. So if I put this in front of you, you can tell me, like, yeah, I remember that day. I remember, like, how I was taking that.
Is it that? Absolutely.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
So then Chris, jump in if you want to. So you're, like, pulling your car off to the side of the road and then.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's what I was going to ask. It was like, what's the process here?
That was the process. If I was going somewhere, I live in Southwest. So I would drive my son up to school in Upper Northwest. I was always in a hurry. So I would tear back down the city. I worked near the Capitol. So I knew all the routes, avoiding traffic lights, things like that. So I was very much in the middle of the city. I would go back and pick him up, drive back down through like Rock Creek Park, go back to work, come back, or even on weekends, if I was going somewhere and I saw something that I liked, then I would take a picture of it. Or if I was really in a hurry, I would jot down where I was and perhaps come back and take it. But the majority of the images, that's exactly how they were shot, just on my way to wherever I was going.
And we're
going
to get to Chris in a second, but one more question was, I just drew a blank here. Oh, what do you feel like your aesthetic is? I mean, is there something in particular you think you're capturing? You know what I'm saying? You're making a mental note, right? You're driving around and you pass a certain section of the city and you're like making a mental note. Something catches your eye. How would you characterize what that thing is that catches your eye?
Well, how I characterize it is that before I started getting interested in photography, I was never what you would consider an artistic person. So usually when I talk about my work, I feel like it's obviously informed by the fact that I'm a native Washingtonian. But it was really, you know, when you look at my work, you're not looking at, you know, my recent work or my last body of work. You're looking at my first body of work. So the only thing I can say is that the images were very inspired. I wasn't looking for anything in particular. Obviously, because I was driving through the city, I was drawn to the architecture. But I can remember growing up always being, you know, always thinking that the D.C. architecture was very beautiful. But I didn't set out with any preconceived idea about what I wanted to photograph. So if I saw something, that was the litmus test. If I thought it was beautiful, then I would pull over and take a picture of it.
Right. And so what I see here is someone who has affection for sort of what they're capturing. And it doesn't strike me as, you know, I don't want to get into semantics, but just sort of a naturalism, I guess. Not like this is a trained photographer and they have specific sort of more of like a, I mean, it sounds like it's a hobby that's developed into something you kind of love.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think if you look at the work, it's all urban. There's an urban aesthetic. It's obviously all DC, heavily inspired by color. I don't really shoot any people, but then again, I wasn't going to, you know, jump out the car and, you know, ask someone to take their picture.
And to get them to sign the release waiver.
Eggs.
Okay. You don't need a release.
I know. I was just...
want to clarify that.
I was being the ignorant host. Somebody's got to do it. But thanks, Carolyn. We're going to talk more about that in a second. But who published the book? And if anybody's listening, where can they buy it?
The book is self-published, completely self-published. I had initially thought about perhaps working with a publisher, but... you know, I work in publishing, so obviously I understand the technicalities of putting a book together. But this book, it's very different to be on the other side of that. So this book is obviously a vessel for my work, and I wanted to control all aspects of it. I wanted to control the exact images that I put in the book, which required me going back through 13, 14 years of work. It's highly edited. I wanted to make sure that, you know, I had full control over how I sequenced the work. So I self-published it. So I started probably very seriously in about 2014. Just this week, hopefully by early next week, I'll be launching a website for the book, thedcic.com.
Great.
And this you'll be able to buy it there.
Cool. And just to remind everybody, this is Carolyn Toy. We've been speaking with, and we'll speak more, but the title is The DCIC. Subtitle is Art of a Vanishing City. And I guess, do you want to provide some commentary on what that means to you?
Sure. I would say around 2011, you know, obviously I'm driving around many of the same places, but I'm starting to notice that most of the things that I had photographed were disappearing. And by disappearing, either they were torn down for to make room for some of the new development, or a lot of the homes, row houses and things like that were being gutted and had been renovated. So I was starting to realize that just about everything I had shot was no longer there. So I thought it was important to add that subtext to reflect that literally these are buildings and structures that are no longer there.
Right, and then to circle back to Michael Horsley, I mean, so much of his work, obviously, that we observed at the gallery was like a photographer as documentarian, sort of capturing a moment in time
right.
before this change. And in D.C., of course, it's a rapid change and a severe change with some of this stuff. I mean, some of the buildings are completely gone. So I guess there's that sort of aspect to your work is
absolutely.
Really like just documentation and documenting something that could be gone tomorrow.
Right, exactly.
So I think there's actually an image in your book that's not one of yours, but was inspirational for the theme of the book.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you, because you spoke about this at the Gallery O on H Street panel that we had, and I was wondering if you could maybe describe that image and maybe speak to how that image like influenced this work. Because I think it's really important to understanding this work is to also understand that first image in the opening of the book.
Right. I would say right around, everything was kind of happening around 2011. I had started going back, looking through my work, and, you know, over the years, I have exhibited my work, you know, in a number of shows, but unless I was doing anything with the work just resided on my computer, so or several computers, actually. So I started going through my work, kind of organizing it, and, you know, I thought to myself, well, you know, I have an interesting body of work. It would be nice to be able to show my work as a body of work. So I started trying to pursue getting in a small solo show, perhaps, or get in a small group show. But, you know, there was really no urgency to do that. But one day, I was driving over by Florida Avenue Market. Down Florida Avenue. And this is right where the old D.C. Farmers Market was. This is right near Gallaudet University. And I came upon this billboard, and it just really shook me to my core. The billboard was a developer's billboard, and it said, pretty soon you won't recognize the place. Promise. And, you know, what was shocking about that to me, first of all, even though I've never lived in that area, I've always had very close affiliations with that area. I can, if you're a long-timer native Washingtonian, as I am, you frequented the old D.C. Farmers Market. When I was in high school and after I graduated college, I studied American Sign Language, so I lived at Gallaudet for several years. And later, you know, would go with my husband to a lot of the wholesalers and things like that. So, you know, if you're not from this place, you might look at that area and think that it was very worn, and indeed it had worn over the years, but it was still a place that to Washingtonians was very special. So the sign, in essence, basically said, you know, was sort of speaking to whomever was there, saying, pretty soon you won't recognize the place, as if that was something that people who love this place would, you know, were desiring, and that wasn't the case. So when I saw that, it just added, it just kind of really ignited my interest in wanting to show my work. Again, because I typically shoot what I love, I didn't shoot the image, but I did get permission. I did find the image in the book because it very much informs, you know, sort of why I really felt an urgency to put my work in a book. And I found it online. Elise Bernard gave me permission to reprint the work. So I just thought it was very important as a primer to looking at the work to include it.
Yeah, and the developer signs their name. It's at the bottom of the sign as if it's a letter. You know, like
there's a signature.
You will never forget me. Signed. I don't know. It's just very direct and,
yes.
and personal.
Yes.
Anyway, thanks. In Union Market. Sign is in the background there.
Yes,
and I know that development is like almost finished now.
It's there, yes.
Right?
It's that building is there. Yes.
Anyway, crazy. But Chris, we're moving on to Chris Suspect, and Carolyn, you can ask away too with Chris. But I guess I want to dive right into that project that I mentioned earlier, and you brought it up at the gallery talk, which is the intersection of the church group with the. I don't know, I'm going to stumble through this, but the Minnesota Avenue Church, can you talk a little bit about that project and the status of that?
Oh, sure. So basically, I'm doing a project. I'm currently in the process of getting that project published. It's entitled Faith, and it's really a look at the gay African American religious community here in Washington, D.C., which is there's a larger community, but there's a group of people that I got introduced to by accident, who definitely welcomed me into their community, allowed me kind of free range to photograph it, and that's everything from the parties that they would have, their personal lives, to their church services. And for me, as a complete outsider, white middle class male,
ponytail,
gray hair, it was really kind of like an eye opener for me, because it was really it was definitely a foreign culture for me, but I was open to it and interested. And I thought, you know, at the first event that I went to, I was like, wow, you know, I've really been invited to something special here that I don't think most people, and even most African Americans, have not really kind of seen.
And how did you meet them initially?
So I was in Georgetown, I think it was like 2013, and I was I do a lot of street photography. I was basically walking around Georgetown with my camera, and I witnessed an accident scene, and this gentleman got hit by a car, mildly hit by a car. And he caused by a taxi, and he caused a scene. He jumped up on the taxi, sat on the hood, is like, I'm not moving, I'm waiting for the police to come here. And he was really kind of flamboyant and just causing a scene. And I was like, this is great, because like, here I have this guy on the hood of a taxi, he's not leaving, traffic's backing up.
Were you taking his picture?
I was taking pictures the entire time, because it was absurd, really. It was like the whole intersection was blocked, and people were getting mad, honking their horns. So anyway, like an ambulance came, the taxi driver was all upset, the police. But the gentleman, his name was Bilal, came up to me afterwards and said, hey, I saw you taking all those photos. Can you give me the photos for my lawyer? And I was like, sure. Gave me his email. And so I sent the photos like the next day and never heard back from him. And then like 3 months later, I got an email from him saying, hey, you know, I'm throwing an event at this restaurant, kind of this after hours thing, and I was wondering if I could pay you to come and photograph it. And I was like, sure. So I showed up, and it turned out to be basically a party for people on the down low. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with down low culture.
I don't think I am.
So down low culture is, and there's various, and I'm no expert, there's various interpretations of it, but it's generally African-American males who are gay but come across in a more masculine, straight way. And like, while they may have a girlfriend or a wife, they do participate in activities with other men on the down low, kind of in secret. So at this party, a lot of people were wearing masks. And so it was really kind of crazy. It was kind of like I was on the set of Eyes Wide Shut. I don't know if you know that movie, but you basically had, you know, a lot of people walking around in their underwear with their masks on.
And so all men, all African American, in someone's home, and this is
no.
Like,
this was in a restaurant that was rented out, and so
what restaurant? Can we say?
I can say it was the Marrakesh on P Street.
Okay, I don't mean to laugh.
But I was really like a fish out of water, because I had no idea. I thought this was just a party. I did not know this is what I was getting into, and I had really had no idea. And I, previously I'd been photographing a lot of punk rock and hardcore shows, and so I was like, you know, I'm going to shoot this with kind of the same aesthetic. I was like, I didn't really know what to do, and I just kind of went crazy and had a good time shooting this whole scene. And then sent the photos off to Bilal the next day. He shared them with everybody. They absolutely loved them. And then I started getting like messages going, hey, can you shoot me and my partner at home? Or we're having this other party. And then and I was like, you know what? I'm going to follow up on this, because I probably this will never have a chance like this again. And so I just kind of delved right into that. And then over the course of like looking at the work,
This is like six years ago, right?
Yeah, 2013. going through the work, I started to notice that a lot of these guys had religious tattoos, like things like God's miracle, or truly blessed, or the rosary tattooed on them. And it was just so predominant that I was like, you know, what's going on here, Bilal, with all this all these tattoos? And they're like, well, you know, a lot of guys here are into are very religious. And in fact, there's a church in Southeast where a lot of them go. And I'm like, it's like, you got to take me to your church. And Bilal actually wasn't. He was Muslim, so he didn't go to that church. But he introduced me to another guy named Terrence, who I'd kind of known in passing. But Terrence brought me to the church. And I had to sit down with the pastor, Reverend Aaron Wade Jones. And I was like, hey, I want to come here and shoot this church. I'm doing this project here. And all I had to show him were like these crazy kind of sexy party photos. So here I am showing the pastor all these kind of party photos in the back office of the church. I was like, you know, and I'd like to kind of juxtapose this with what happens in the church. And he was like, oh, this is like from sin to salvation. He's like, I love the idea. And so the next service, I came in and he stood up in front of the church and he said, hey, Chris is going to be here taking photos. If you don't want to be in the photos, sit in the back of the church. Otherwise, we're giving him free reign. And so I basically shot like almost every other Sunday, or almost every Sunday for a year, while going to these kind of late night parties and things like that.
Always at the restaurant, or were they at different locations?
No, so they are. So it gets a little deep. So this is why it was a really big learning curve for me, because I wasn't, you know, that familiar with this community, or even like a gay community,
like a whole new world. Basically,
it was a whole new world, and so you know what I discovered is that. And by going out with them, is that there's a lot of racism within the actual gay community here in Washington, D.C. So what I discovered was, like, we would go out to, like, a bar in D.C. Together, and then I would, they would be charged different prices for their drinks than I would as a white person.
And they're at a straight bar.
No, this was at a gay bar.
And they were charged more per drink than white people, than a white person.
Yeah, than a gay white person. There are also like bogus dress codes. There's also, and you know, outside of that, and there's also, and if you go on gay dating sites, you'll see things like, you know, no blacks, no fatties, kind of in they're searching for partners. So this community basically formed to create these kind of parties or places where they could express their own selves, kind of outside of that prejudice, which is why these are kind of parties that happen in secret, if you will. You have to be invited. There is actually, there's kind of a secret text messaging invite list. And if you get on that list, you'll get a text blast going, hey, the party's live tonight at so-and-so, you know, at such a place or whatever, you know, show up with this message, get 10% off the cover or whatever it is.
So, but it is like an established venue in the city?
No, it was always changing. And it could oftentimes just be at people's houses and or a restaurant, you know. And now there's a larger network that I think from it goes from Atlanta to D.C. to New York. But it's really quite an underground kind of thing that you don't, it's not really there on the surface. But it's really out of, in response to kind of not really being accepted within the larger gay community, you know. And other things I learned about as well is, which I found very interesting, is a lot of these folks look at, you know, African-American leaders like Obama and Oprah as being whitewashed, where they'll accept homosexuality in general, but they will never address it within their own African-American community. You always hear them, you know, it's very, very rare for them to speak about sexuality issues within their own race.
Yeah, and Chris, I have to have two follow-up questions, but the first one was, how did these... So you're a photographer and you're taking pictures, but a lot of what you're telling us is based on conversations. It sounds like all this information is based on conversations that
sure.
you had. Where are these conversations taking place then? And how is that?
So, I mean, outside, you know, when I was not taking photos, I was like kind of, you know, I was sharing the photos with the members of the church, and because I was trying to be very respectful, you know, because I wanted to make sure I was representing folks accurately, because I was really taking some, there's some sensitive photos in here. You know, it's like people in their private lives or with their partners.
Are you following the same group of individuals?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, the church was a wider group. Mm-hmm. You know, the
that's what I was going to ask. The overlap is between, like, what does the overlap look like between those, the individuals that you were going to the restaurants and the after hours parties and mm-hmm. gatherings, a circle, and then this other circle is of the church going members in the congregation.
Yeah. So I would say that smaller group of, you know, the network of friends that were going to the parties is probably, you know, there's like 5-6 core members, but then that extended to about maybe 15-20 other folks that I regularly saw. And in the church, there was about maybe 10 of those folks represented within the church itself. But the church is rather small. I mean, there was like, you know, maybe 50, 60, 70 people at a service.
Right. And then you had mentioned that racism, the inherent racism and some of the other issues before I asked you those questions about how they don't talk about certain aspects of their lives or their sexuality. Right. But are you reflecting that in the book project? How are you capturing that or reflecting that?
So, yeah. So that's, you know, how do you capture racism in a photo is really difficult, you know. So the idea is to kind of, you know, sequence the photos that kind of tell a tale of kind of, you know, being an outsider to finding a community, to embracing faith and to forming like a larger, fulfilling, wholesome or, you know, wholesome community is kind of the tale I want to tell. But visually, which is difficult to do, but then also I want to supplement that with text from people in academia who work on, you know, racial and gender issues about this subject matter. And I've already identified a couple folks who've kind of written you know, essays or books on this. So the idea is to have them kind of supplement the photos with sort of more of an academic perspective on this area.
Yeah, and then when you're taking images in the church and you're sharing those with the pastor or with the congregants themselves, mm-hmm. what is their reaction? How do they respond?
It's just nothing but positivity, really. I've not once did I have anyone say, "Hey, don't use that photo." I mean, because once they saw it, I think they recognized that there was something there, and you know, it felt important to them.
Right, and I got to say, like, the unspoken thing here for me is like you're entering this two extremely sensitive or complicated worlds or whatever you want to call that, right? And you're treading lightly and sensitively into these worlds, but yet it's embraced by those you're documenting.
Well, yeah, because I wasn't, I was completely upfront and honest, and I was sharing like everything with them, right? I wasn't trying to, I wanted to make sure they were comfortable with what I was doing, because otherwise, if they're not comfortable and I'm taking the photos, that's going to show in the photos, I think, yeah. You know, I wanted to be like candid and honest, And to do that, you know, you got to be open and honest yourself, right? And you want to, you know, create a kind of a level of trust there. And I've been very respectful of this work. I'm not publishing any excerpts outside of, you know, nothing's appearing out of context. It's very important to me that everything appears within context so it doesn't get misinterpreted. Or
nothing exploited about it, you know?
Yeah, where some of the footage could easily be like exploited, right? Because of what, you know, of the situation that I photographed, it could easily be taken out of context and seen as something else. So it's really of prime importance that everything is kind of in a package that makes sense. And this is how this all belongs together.
Yeah. And this is Chris Suspect we're speaking with. And then what's the status of that project?
So currently it is to be published by Photo Evidence, which is a book publisher out of New York and Paris, I believe they have an office in. And they're also the folks that publish the World Press Photo Book Award each year. And yeah, it's been great kind of working with those folks. I've brought this to some other publishers. Book publishing is a whole other episode here in terms of photography, but no book publisher these days in photography is really kind of paying for your publication. It's the onus is on the photographer themselves. And so, and I've kind of put my foot down and said, you know what, I am not going to be self-publishing. If someone wants to publish my work, they've got to be invested in it as well, just as much as I have with my time, as they with their finances. So while I've been accepted or, you know, approached by other publishers to publish this work, they've all kind of been like, well, you got to do a Kickstarter, you got to do this. And I'm not really, I'd rather spend my time shooting or working on another project than spending my time being an accountant or a fundraiser. So I've kind of put the onus of that onto this publisher, and, you know, they have connections with foundations and whatnot. So anyway, we're trying to raise the money necessary to publish the book at this point.
And we don't know when it would see the light of day yet.
Well, the goal is to have it out this year, so.
Cool. Sometime in 2019, look for that. But I'm holding Chris Suspect device. This is a black and white stuff, and I assume the stuff we were just talking about is black and white as well?
Yeah, that's black and white as well.
Okay. And then can you walk us through a little bit
So what
we see here?
Yeah, so this is a book called Suspect Device. It is basically, it's sort of my midlife crisis captured in photos. Back when I was younger, I was back in the 80s, I was going to punk and hardcore shows here in Washington, D.C., and I didn't have a camera back then, but what I remembered from back then was kind of like just this swirling chaos and energy and a little sense of being frightened. You know, I was like 14, 15.
Awkward 14-year-old, it says here.
Yeah, yeah. Awkward 14-year-old, yes. And, you know, so I wanted to kind of, and I remember, and I going back through other photo books that are from that era and seeing photos, and I'm like, you know, this is not capturing the energy that I felt. And so what I wanted to do was like, can I go back in time and capture that kind of energy, but using current bands? So every band in this book is from like 2011 to like 2014, and all at current, like, or not current now, but, you know, house shows and stuff like not too long ago. But the idea was to see if I could kind of recreate that feeling that I had and kind of capture that in photos.
And Alec Mackay provided the foreword. I just left hanging out with those guys over at Georgetown, so.
Yeah, so, Alec was, he saw this work. It was like, yeah, I'd definitely love to write a foreword for it. Because, you know, it's interesting because, like, and we were talking about this earlier, Ray, about, you know, how a lot of the people talk about Washington, D.C., they're always speaking about, you know, Minor Threat and Dag Nasty, Rites of Spring, all those early Discord bands, but then it's kind of like gets dropped off the map. It's like, you know, what happened after 1984, really, in D.C.? And there's not really much on that so much. So I thought it was kind of important to kind of, you know, put something together about some more of a current era in D.C. because the punk scene still thrives even to this day. We just had the Damaged City Fest that just occurred at the Black Cat, not too far down the street from here. And it's like a scene that's never died. I mean, it's lasted almost longer than almost any other genre of music.
Right, and isn't that great to see that it just doesn't just stop?
Yeah, but where's the documentation of it? You know, everyone knows the whole Salad Days era. You know, for me, this is more of a personal project. I didn't go into this going, hey, I wanted to document the errors of 2011 to 2014. It comes up across that as part of it, but this was really more of like kind of like a personal project for me.
Right, Chris, and I love the cover. I do judge a book by its cover. I think that's important, but I love this cover. What can you tell us a little bit about
that? Sure, and actually you want to open that up and the whole cover.
Oh, the now, back. Yeah. Let me flip it.
Because it's one photo.
Oh, my. So yeah, the cover, the front proper, and then the back side, but
yeah,
the front is of a woman.
Yeah, so it's this was actually at a show that was like what I would call like a hip hop / hardcore show, and so you had the band, the guy on or the woman on the front is in the audience, and the person on the cover is a singer for the punk band called Copstabber. And she was watching Copstabber, and it's just, she was like, the expression on her face is like, I just don't get it, really. And she was obviously there to see, what was the band that played, part of the Odd Future crew. They're named Mellow Hype was who they played with, which was a really kind of interesting mix-up. But if you know Odd Future, it makes sense. But anyway, I don't think the audience knew that crossover there existed. So it was sort of this kind of dichotomy between the juxtaposition between the two. So that's where that comes from.
Right. And I just a final question for you, Chris, and then we're open and we can wrap. But in your previous project we were speaking of, and then in this Suspect Device, I'm curious to know how you introduce yourselves to people. I mean, we're talking about sort of subcultures, whatever the term is for both of these. How do you, hi, I'm Chris Suspect. I'm the photographer. I'll be taking your picture. Like, what does that look like?
So, well, usually I start taking photos before I introduce myself. Just because I'm always looking for like a candid response. And things that, you know, at punk rock shows, it's not so hard because, you know, there's a lot of people there taking pictures. There's bands. They're expecting their photo to be taken.
You just blend in.
So I blend in. It also helps the fact that a lot of people within the punk scene know who I am because I used to play in some bands in the area. So I kind of, you know, I have a history there. So it's not so difficult, you know, with the Faith Project. I mean, that took some work and introduction. But once there, I was, you know, invited to go shoot that initially by someone who was an organizer of these kind of underground parties. So I had that as a little bit of a backup there.
Great. And I have a question for Carolyn, and then we can wrap unless there's anything. Wrap it up. We're not going to wrap, but I guess...
Yeah, don't ask me to wrap.
But Carolyn, do you tell people you are a photographer? Like, what are your family and friends and your coworkers, since they were a part of this initially in some capacity, do you ever tell people I'm a photographer or I take pictures or... You know what I mean? Is that a part of your profile or personality in a sense? You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah, it absolutely is now. It wasn't always the case. I think early on, I kind of grappled with that. Like, at what point do you say that this is just a hobby? I'm taking pictures.
Right, versus no, I'm, you know, photographer capital P or whatever.
Right. Well, I came to that point fairly early. I used to say I was, you know, oh, I take pictures as a hobby or, you know, I do photography on the side, but I think it just got to the point where I realized that this was just something that this was the passion that I had never found in life. And I made the concerted effort to call myself a photographer. So it wasn't, you know, I do this during the day, but I'm also a photographer.
Right. And I would just think that would be important to a person who, you know, transitioning from something you do to a hobby to the next phase, which is, no, I'm a photographer and this is something I take seriously and will continue to do.
Right. Absolutely. I think there were certain pictures that I took early on that I just realized it was such a personal choice and a personal, you know, inspiration that it just indicated that I knew I had found the thing that I was, you know, most passionate
nice.
About.
Nice. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you.
But we'll have you both back and we'll talk about book publishing as photographers.
Oh, that's
And we're not going to wrap, but I do thank you guys both. This is Carolyn Toy and Chris Suspect here, DC photographers. But I have to make a plug for a special collections event Tuesday, May 7th at 8 p.m. at Suns Cinema. Here nearby is hosting a home movie day. So we've asked people in DC to submit their home movies. We've digitized them and we're going to watch them. I always like to say, I hope there's a cat video somewhere in there. Don't like cats, but you know, it feels like it should be included. So there's more information available online for that. And we're looking just for, I'm sorry, digital content only. But thank you guys both for coming today.
Thank you for having me.
And we're wrapping up here. So this has been an episode of All Things Local on Full Service Radio. We broadcasted live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Please visit dclibrary.org to learn more about the library's services and programs or talk to us online at DCPL on Twitter and at DC Public Library on Instagram. Listen and download the show wherever you listen to your podcast by searching Full Service Radio. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right.